antics from Errat Ortiz yesterday at Gulfstream. Something's going to happen, and it's going to, potentially be, awful. So the stewarding, it seems like it comes down to stewarding, and you would have thought the 30 days from the incident in New York would have brought him around, but no, and he's just a danger out there, essentially.
I didn't see the incident, so I can't come. We'll watch it on Roberts and see it. But it's stewarding is a good. We need to get a steward or two on in the next, next month or two, just to get their views on what they look at, how they decide what the penalties are going to be, how they review films and things like that with the jocks. And I did not see this one at all, so I can't comment on it. But it's every time these guys get on horseback and leave the paddock for a race, they're basically taking their life in their hands. So if things go on out on the track that compromises that, that's a problem. So we need to take a look at it a little bit more. Speaking of jocks, I had this down yesterday. We got to the point where we're going to talk about the fairgrounds races last week. And it was one thing that I've never seen this: two consecutive big days. Joel Rosario, who has moved his base to Oakland, kind of, and does a lot of out-of-town riding. On January 22nd, he went to the fairgrounds and rode 9 horses for Steve Asmussen. Then, last Saturday, on February 19th, he rode 11 horses for Steve Asmussen. I don't think I've ever seen a jock ride that many horses for one trainer, consecutive weekends type of thing. 20 horses for the same trainer in 2 big days. I don't know. Pretty, you wonder why he moved out here, and one of the reasons obviously was to ride a lot of horses for Steve Asmussen. But he's creeping up in the standings here as well. But I just the overnight came out, and I said I got to count these up. I just don't remember seeing that kind of numbers volume for one guy and one trainer.
I heard kind of a. Did I hear this? I guess we heard this yesterday at lunch. Thanks, by the way, to Ron Moquette, who in Moquette's appearances just seem to light everybody up. Everybody so enjoys Ron. He's refreshing. He's candid. He just got a terrific, approach. And everybody listening, players and shareholders and fans, really enjoyed his perspective yesterday. But then we got to have lunch, and with Steve Hobby, the famous trio. I put the picture up I had from several years ago, and that was actually a Churchill, and the late Lynn Whiting, who was just an incredible character, and the third leg of that triumvirate with Hobby and Moquette, and famous lunch trio that had several traditions both here and in Louisville. And either Ronnie or I think it was Ronnie told the story. Steve Asmussen unhappy with somebody's ride, and when they came back. When they came back after they dismounted, Steve said, what's the story? And he said, well, he might need blinkers. Okay, all right, what else? Anything else? Well, he might want to shorten them up a little bit. Okay, anything else? And he said, I don't know. I think that's it. He said, okay, good, because I want to know what to tell Rosario when he rides him next time.
Hey, I mean... some of the stories that are told there, you don't want to repeat, but they're just funny. And there's a lot of racetrack stuff going on, so there's a little discussion of what some of the riders say when they hop off, and it's pretty good. It'd be good to have a little microphone over there maybe one day with as they're having their conversation.
They suggested that the public would love. I mean, there's some days, of course, that a microphone in that setting would not be advisable when there's some when there's some four-letter words
right.
flying.
Just casual funny stories. I mean, that are real, that are just hilarious if you could hear them. And the thing is, you can't tell them like they tell them. That's the thing. They got there, and both those guys, Ronnie and Hobby, were just hilarious. And you know, you hear Ron here. He's just a positive, good guy. Speaks from the heart, and he's one of the good guys around here to talk to, and always smiling. And it was funny. He was talking about the heated blanket or the heated vest yesterday.
Yep.
I just went and saw Keely outside. I go, "Do you have a heated blanket?" She shows me the two red lights on there. She goes, "Are you kidding me? This is the greatest thing going."
It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
I've got to go, I suppose, like what? Like Dick's Sporting Goods and Cabela's? And
I don't know, but
places
I told,
like that.
I told
and
her,
tech shops.
I said, "You should be a spokeswoman and go out there and sell these things." I'm telling you, get a picture of her out here doing work, and these things would sell like hotcakes here. I never heard of that. I guess if they have heated gloves, they could have heated vests. But anyway, we're hoping that the weather turns a little bit warmer for the weekend. Not quite sure yet. It's Thursday. We're a couple days off, of course. We're going to race tomorrow and then Saturday, and hoping for a little bit better weather. But I think it's going to stay above the freezing line, which is the key. As far as getting here, because the roads get bad with the freezing rain. So, thumbs up. But like I said, this is the hardiest group of horsemen I've ever been around. The weather doesn't seem to faze them. And as long as the track is open and they're gonna, they're out there training. And believe me, we're not here. The track crew at Oakland is not hesitant at all to pull the plug and say, you know what, we're not training. And we'll move it.
What is the
or to train during the day?
What are the deciding factors? Is it the frozen? If you get a frozen surface or
it's just a reminder here because we are in the state park. National Park. Hot Springs is considered Hot Springs National Park, and we are part of that. You can't use any chemicals, just natural remedies, and so. They do what they do here. I don't know exactly if there's a line that goes below X amount of degrees. It's just the field going over there. If it's frozen, there's clods, and they know. And like I said, there's no hesitancy at all to say, nope, not training today or not training this morning. If it was not, decent enough this morning, they would have the option of saying, we're going to open the track at noon, which is, I've never seen that anywhere else. And the trainers, they just adjust and go out at noon if it need be. So, they're out there doing their thing. I mean, I haven't seen too many breezes, that's for sure. But they're out there stretching their legs, and they're good at anticipating, how the track's going to be. So earlier in the week, they had bigger work tabs, just to get them out of the way. So the show will go on.
Well, and a couple people have asked about the weekend. I mean, tomorrow is going to be very cold again, and so... We'll keep an eye on the forecast, but after anticipating a cold Saturday, but not inclement, now wet weather appears to be a part of Saturday. So and when will they make them? It feels like the infield becomes. They were excited about opening the infield. Saturday, but that feels like an iffy proposition now.
Yeah, no, well, that'll be upstairs makes that call. I don't want to predict anything there, but it 3 days ago it was going to be sunny
yeah.
50, and the old weatherman decided to do something else, so we'll keep an eye on that.
All right, well, a couple of things, and I know you want to also touch on a little bit about the Saturday. Let me put this aside for Chris Block, and there we go. A couple of things. I talked yesterday. Obviously, we talked about the most notably. We talked about the 3-year-old performances with Epicenter and Turner Loose. But there was a lot more going on at Fairgrounds on Saturday that we hadn't really gotten to, and that included the Maiden efforts. And, you know, one thing I also didn't get a chance to do as we play catch-up is touch base with Andy Beyer. It sure felt, based on the figs, that the Beyer team felt that the track was slowing down as the day went on, because Epicenter, a 98 Beyer, and if you kind of work your way through the day, some performances, including Olympiads 102 in the mineshaft, some people wondered why the why there was some disparity between the Maiden and the allowance. Obviously, different parts of the race day. It was sunny, there was breeze, and I was on the track apron a good part of the day. I did not see the water trucks come around. If they did, I missed it. So I don't think they added water. So that track could have been in a drying scenario throughout the day and gotten a little slower as the afternoon went on. So I think that played a factor in the figs, but the performances themselves are certainly noteworthy. I mean, we already mentioned that the turf upsets that included Pyron and you're my hero, Ron. There's Ronnie not only buying lunch but bringing us coffee. Attaboy.
I wonder if it's loaded.
Well, they take a payback because you mean loaded with a little treat.
Yes.
Take a look at that. Yeah. All right. The three turf upsets that started with Pyron, and was happy for Declan Carroll, who's had a challenging meet and came into the weekend with three wins. Carroll, terrific on Pyron, and had been with Michelle Lovell for lunch, actually, the day before at Loyza's, and that Pyron was the horse that she singled out as being worried about in terms of Just Might trying to come back in the Colonel Power and win it again. And Pyron runs Just Might down in the late stages. So that was the first of the upsets, and 19-1 paid 41.40. You also had, of course, and we're going to talk to Chris Block about his nice win with She Can't Sing, the stunner from Dallas Stewart, Dallas. There's a funny conversation.
I was just going to say, there's no such thing as a stunner from Dallas Stewart.
Not anymore, I guess. Right?
We've been doing this for decades, and he's one of those guys you got to put in. He's never out of it. And you interview him after the race, and he's like, "Oh yeah, what's the big deal? Of course he won. Paid $70. That's okay." Constantly. Can't leave him out.
It's one of those scenarios where you look at his horses sometimes and you say, what is there in this PP, and how can you project this horse as a major player? And Cavalry Charge had been moving forward. And when he tried the Colonel Bradley, I mean, there really wasn't a obvious excuse. Well, you mentioned the good.
But he's not yielding.
Well, the inside of that turf course on Le Comte Day was compromising. I don't know what else to say. They in fact, the reason they didn't open the inner lanes on Saturday was for the same reason, that they had some wet weather earlier in the week, and they wanted the turf course to be as fair as it could be. Some horsemen kind of questioned a little bit that scenario, that they thought that there was no reason not to use the inner paths on Saturday, and it also it sure seemed, I mean, if you watch the replays, you'll see, and you saw it live, there was plenty of dust being kicked up. I mean, that turf course was certainly firm on Saturday. So, anyway, that probably is the thing to look at when it came to cavalry charge. One thing about the wins, paid 72.60, and Adomo making that first North American start for Chad Brown and for Michael Dubb and Lou Lazzanero and Sal Kuhlman. He came running, and Adomo is going to be fine. Santin ran like he needed one, hadn't been seen since the Hollywood Derby. And so, you know, took plenty of money, and that was, of course, everybody knew that was a line that was going to be slashed and ended up going favored, in fact, just over 5-2. But the cavalry charge win was really a bit of a salvation on the day for West Point, because Vinco, the million-dollar three-year-old, there was no reason not to anticipate a nice performance off the debut where he came running late. Vinco was dismal, and minutes later, or an hour later or so, here's cavalry charge shocking the fairgrounds. In fact, Terry Finley said, "Roller coaster ride, roller coaster." So,
let's not forget, Dallas Stewart came up under who?
Dwayne Lucas.
And Dwayne Lucas runs his horses when they're fit and ready to run. So this horse had a little bit of a break, came back, and just second start back. So when they're ready to run, they run them. And you know, I always throw in Doug O'Neill in this case, and I mean, Doug has won so many races because he's in them. They're ready to run. You know, I can't find a perfect spot. He's ready to run. Let's put him in a race.
Well, and
they win.
And who have, what disciple of his and former assistant of his is doing the same thing with the Calumet?
Jack
Sisterson is in the exact same frame of mind. That if the horse is sound and healthy and doing okay, enter. You can't win if you're not in it.
Right. And also, these guys aren't worried about, like Ron said, they're not worried about that number that's in the form. You know, the horse comes out, he runs second, third, or fourth, he gets a check. That takes a little bit of the onus off the owner, and we'll move on to the next one. But they're not worried about win percentage, in other words.
Well, that win was, Brian Hernandez Jr. As well involved in this. And, of course, they had also had the maiden breaker early on the card with Tale of Ready Chianti. It's funny. whenever these horses of Chuck Fipke's turn up, there's always people that keep asking, you know, why these names that are so odd and stilted, and I've explained this, and we've had Sid Fernando explain it, and apparently it doesn't satisfy people. This is a Tale of a Caddy out of Ready for Chianti. Tale of Ready Chianti. They name the Fipke operation names the horses so that instantly Fipke, who is easily tabbed as a genius, holding patents and a fascinating guy, it makes it easy for him to mentally keep inventory of his horses. So that's why you get these hybrid names, very simple hybrid names of Dam and Stallion.
Whatever works.
There you go. So that's it. Yeah, not a fast. That race came back slow, as it happens. The maiden winners, though, Rick, that really are going to be interesting and exciting. There had been Asmussen, more or less not promising a win, but he did say that Marsalis was going to run in under 110, and that in that fourth race. Well, he did run in under 110. There was one problem. Todd Pletcher shows up with that Spitestown colt, Momentous, And they put on a terrific show. And I got that great picture of the two of them. And that was kind of fun. But Momentous heads Marsalis in that maiden race. And 76 buyers for the two of them. And we'll see, you know, we'll see what Momentous turns up, where he turns up next. And yeah, you got a very square 5-1 essentially on Momentous.
And you know, I got to say, you're reading off, we're talking about a big day there, and you're talking about some maiden races. I'm starting to see more of that, starting to see 5, 6, 7, 8 years putting these maiden specials on the big days. And I think it's great because putting these nice horses in front of the fans are basically like future stars. And if you can get nice full fields of, you know, real good maiden races on those days, I think it's a treat, because here we are talking about a maiden win next to a graded win. And, you know, sometimes you have to do that. You have to put those stars in front of the people and them go, you know, I remember when that horse broke his maiden and now he's running a stake. So I like the tracks have started to do that more and more.
The other maiden winner of note was Strong Quality, and that was a good group two in the sixth. This was the race that was going long, and this was a race that some people were asking, you know, why did Strong Quality get a 76? Why did Cyberknife get an 87? We'll talk about Al Gold's Cyberknife in a minute. But then, you know, Epicenter in 98, and that indication is that the track was slowing down as the afternoon went on. Strong Quality for Mark Cassie, and this is the Gary Barber Kinsman partnered Quality Road out of the Tisnow mare, and had every reason to do a nice show improvement off the debut where he went three quarters. And this is obviously a horse to keep an eye on as well. And then came Cyberknife in the allowance. And Cyberknife, of course, had gotten disqualified, if we go back to last summer, and kind of late last summer, right? Yeah, September, actually, at Churchill, and taken down, and it couldn't really in a call that didn't have to be made, but, then very quickly, stretched out, third start, breaks the maiden, and kind of ran evenly in the LeCompte. And Brad Cox and Al Gold backed up Cyberknife here. This is a gun runner that Al paid real money for, and $400,000. And clearly is heading towards stakes. Now, he's going to have to keep improving. 87 buyer in this effort, but looked really good doing it. And Florent Giroux, basically geared him down the last, the last 150 yards. And Cyberknife, you assume Louisiana Derby. I mean, I don't know why you wouldn't.
Depends what the long range goal is. They don't rush him along, but timing's right.
This was career start number five. So. This is, and notably, this is a horse that's crossed the wire first three times.
You know, you mentioned career start number five, like that's a big deal, but it is a big deal. Here's a list of the Derby horses. If you want to go back, and this is something that just gets me. You know, the favorite in that race was who? I'm talking about the Risen Star. Smile Happy,
right,
making his third start of the year. The second choice, Zandon, making his third start of the year. So, in a way, sometimes we don't even know what we're looking at yet. I don't even know how these horses are.
Yeah.
And so, I know we're not going to go back to the days of when they ran 10 times as two-year-olds, but it'd sure be nice to see some more past performance on these horses before they get going.
Well, California Chrome, probably of recent vintage, California Chrome, probably the most experienced coming into into the classic season, right?
Right.
And then had like 10 starts at that point.
Yeah, then we had the old Justified deal where he didn't start until like today.
Yeah.
Type of thing.
Yeah.
When you think about that, is pretty unreal. But it's just the way it is now, and I understand it. They want to, you have a nice horse, you want to make sure you get there. You don't run as much, but it's amazing when I started looking at, here's the Derby noms and the ones in the last couple of pools, and they just don't have a whole lot to go on. So there's a chance to really, if you know something, you can make a few bucks. And are you done with that? A little bit. When's Chris coming on?
We got Chris in about 10 minutes. And John Ortiz just wandered by, and probably get John on when he wanders back. A couple of other quick notes from Saturday. Continental Coins, Brett Calhoun, who is suddenly winning races on the grass, by the handful, which is kind of funny. He was really excited about Continental Coins making the transition to grass and did well. Eddie Keneally had that Freedom's Way break the maiden on the grass, ran well, a declaration of war. And we'll talk about She Can't Sing's upset. Jareth Loveberry, who I got to talk to a little bit, and he's a journeyman that seemingly, kind of shouldering his way, into a higher rank, as it were. And Olympiad, we talked about a little bit. Turner Loose, upset in the Rachel Alexandra, that group is going to need to define itself between now and the Fairgrounds Oaks. And the people keep asking about Echo Zulu. It feels like there's no timetable on Echo Zulu, and there had been some talk that she might make her way here for Honeybee and Fantasy track potentially, but you can tell that every indication is that they're not rushing her along. And it feels, it's funny, it feels like both her and Chad's now 3-year-old, Jack Christopher. It feels like the two of them are kind of on parallel tracks, that kind of a second half of the year scenario.
And what about the 2-year-old champion?
Also has not worked, Corniche. And there's plenty of fresh faces. By the way, I will mention, I don't know why this popped in my head just now, but when you talk about horses that turn the page, it seems like every week we're coming up with now 4-year-olds, that keep, emerging each weekend. Well, how about yesterday's draw at Gulfstream? If you haven't looked ahead to Saturday, maybe the most interesting race is the fourth. Well, of course, Latrusk is coming back in the Royal Delta. But in the fourth, which is a 6.5 furlong first level allowance, how about the return of Reinvestment Risk? I'm sure that people forgot about the hopeful runner-up and the champagne runner-up from 2020. Here's the 4-year-old debut of Chad's upstart colt for Seth Klarman, and Reinvestment Risk draws the outside in a group of six. Down inside, we should mention another horse that I had sort of forgotten about. Milliken comes back for Ian Wilkes and the Withams, and this is the Into Mischief colt, the homebred out of the very nice Ivory Empress. So it's good to see this one back. First out winner at Ellis, and was second to Olympiad at Keeneland in October. This is a nice horse too. So it the ones in between, I don't want to say that they're cannon fodder, but Milliken and Reinvestment Risk, two more potentially impactful 4-year-olds coming out.
That's what we need. We need more 4-year-olds. We need horses sticking around and running when they're four. So there's a lot of money to be made out there at 4-year-olds. And I'm going to say in the next 2 or 3 years, you're going to see some changes that will hopefully help keep horses around and be on their 3-year-old year. That's a 2-year tease. How's that?
Speaking of keeping us around, just got a text from Moquette. That is not coffee. That is chai tea with almond milk. Said, trying to keep you healthy.
I'm in. There's a horse running that runs around here. Chai tea.
Is it?
Yeah.
I don't think I've noticed.
Absolutely. I'm in. I'm taking it. I thought it was coffee, and I'm going out to drink coffee. But now I'm dipping.
Now you're excited. So I'm glad I said
tea and almond milk. Well, I put almond milk in my smoothies in the morning. So I'm, my daughter has turned me into a health nut, so I'm an almond milk guy now. Yeah, you can laugh.
I'm using almond milk for my in cereal. By the way, you know, I didn't. You were down early yesterday. I had my first bowl of Frosted Flakes. Hammer's got one box of cereal in the house, Frosted Flakes, and
hey,
they're great.
But it's hard to find Sugar Smacks. So
that's my sweet favorite cereal.
Yeah, well, Quick Draw McGraw. So
I love sugar. It's so funny that
So for Frosted Flakes, I don't go anywhere with that. Frosted Flakes and peanut butter. That you'll find that.
Well, I want to talk to you about your peanut butter situation.
Yeah,
you got something very strange that people are going to be horrified by.
What?
You got a jar of Skippy on the ground on the counter.
Yeah.
But in the cabinet as backup, you've got Jif. Well, which is it? Because you can't be both a Skippy and a Jif. That's not normal.
Well, it's hard to find the Laura Scudder's where you whip it,
yeah,
peanut butter,
sure,
here,
sure,
which is I normally use. So every morning I have this super smoothie that I put in strawberries, blueberries, bananas, and a big huge scoop of peanut butter.
Wow.
And chai seeds and acai. So when I go buy peanut butter here, I just get the biggest one, usually the double pack, whatever it is, because I can't find the natural stuff, so I just get whatever I get. So
that's interesting.
You know, I grew up, I'm a Skippy guy, but I can do Jif. You know, it's all mixed up anyway. It doesn't matter. And like I said, now is this a hunch bet or not?
There's chai tea in the second
Friday.
Race on Friday. Look at that. Who's horse?
Tim Martin.
Tim Martin, for the Yegos.
So there you go.
How about that?
Can't make it up. So there's our play of the day. Play of the week. Chai tea in a second.
What's the price? What are we looking at?
Yeah, who cares about what the price is?
That's funny. That is funny. All right.
An Arkansas bread maiden. Doesn't matter. They're going long.
All right. Well, we're going to get ready to bring Chris Block in here. And, you know, for people listening on Sirius XM, others of you are going to hear this later in the day on the archive and the pod. All the equipment from a week ago Thursday, all the equipment was badly damaged by that power outage. And so Casey very dutifully and steadily is going through everything, and the next thing he's got to swap out is, he thinks, the sound card on the streaming computer. That's why the stream is not up yet, so bear with him on that. And the phone module, which is a unit, specialty unit as well, the phone module may need service. So he's very steadily working through all the various technical aspects of mounting this, which is not the easiest thing to do. So we're going to reach out here and have Chris Block join us.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that earlier when we just had a call, and it was Jose Santos, who we had talked about yesterday, who's the roving jocks agent that just done a great job. He just checked in. He's supposed to land tonight. We were going to get him on the show tomorrow to explain how he gets the job done and has two or three jocks at two or three tracks and coordinates. And Ronnie Moquette yesterday kind of hinted at, a lot of computer work, obviously a lot of films, and he's just one of the sharpest guys around. And you know what? You're right. It's not as cold today.
No, not nearly.
I've shed a jacket and I've shed my gloves here. So
there is a potential that they've already closed that. They may have closed the the garage door. That's a possibility. Happy to have Chris Block join us. Chris, good morning. Oh, hold on. Wait a minute. How am I? Jeez. Let's try that again. Chris? All right, one more time.
Can you hear me?
There we go. I don't know
what. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning. Rick Hammerly's with us as well, Chris. And, you were on the list when I left the fairgrounds. You were on the list to reach out to congratulate you about the win in the Big Al, the Big Al Memorial. She Can't Sing. You got a very heady ride and big upset. And then came this story from Jim O'Donnell overnight about the situation in Chicagoland with a potential casino downtown and some maneuvering going on to keep the Bears in the city limits. And then there's Arlington, basically sitting potentially in limbo. And I said, now I got two reasons to call Chris Bock.
Yeah, well, as far as the Jim O'Donnell story, I don't know much about what information he has there. The one thing that we're trying to do through the Horsemen's Association is reach out to the Bears. Ted Phillips is their president, and when they were going through their hiring of the new GM and coach, it was quoted a couple times in some papers here that Ted Phillips was going to focus strictly on the Arlington Heights property, and it was going to take a lot of due diligence to go through to see if they were going to actually buy the property. So my thoughts are that we need to reach out to him just to see if there's any thoughts that they have on keeping the track part of what they look to maybe develop out there. He's talked about it being a mega entertainment center there in Arlington Heights at the location. So I'm thinking that maybe, and this is probably a long shot, but I'm hoping maybe they have not made a decision on the track yet, and that possibly there could be some sort of thought process on their part to make it part of what they're doing out there. So I'm having a hard time finding a way to get to Ted Phillips, and I guess if anybody out there knows how to get to him and can contact me, that'd be great, because I'd love to have just a couple minutes of his time to see if he's even interested in talking about it.
Churchill has a shareholders conference today, and undoubtedly when if Bill Carstangen doesn't address it directly, you would imagine there'll be questions from the media and the financial community reportage, so maybe there'll be some answers. And O'Donnell speculates on that in this, and this is an extensive piece, and he talks about the specifics, the 62-acre parcel in the South Loop that would seemingly solve everybody's everybody's concerns, including the mayor wanting to keep the Bears. I don't think any mayor of Chicago wants to be on their watch when the Bears leave the city confines.
No question. I think Mayor Lightfoot, she's very, very concerned about that. And there's been talk of different parcels of land down there to put a casino. They have the what passed in the gaming bill, and need I remind everybody that Churchill walked away from it, Arlington. But there is a license granted for downtown, and there's been a lot of different talk about what location would work best for the casino. So, I think I don't know how much land it's going to take to put in a casino plus a stadium that would be much better than Soldier Field with a retractable roof or even just a dome stadium, but I think the Bears are looking for some sort of enough land to be able to do some sort of entertainment venue as well with it. So I don't know. Jim may have a lot more information than I would ever have, but if that's the case and there's a chance that they could keep him in the city, that maybe improves our chances to open and keep Arlington alive out here.
Yeah, and of course, there's so many parts of, and O'Donnell has followed this religiously. I mean, every twist and turn he has written, and you can read back through a half a dozen pieces from the last calendar year, essentially. And one of the things that he also speculates on is the potential, and obviously with the Colonial purchase coming down on Monday, from CDI, O'Donnell speculates that the situation could also find Churchill getting out of that Rivers Casino and leaving the marketplace entirely. And so, does that reinvigorate the potential to sell to that group that basically approached them last year? The Horsemen.
Yeah, well, that, That would be the hope, Steve. I mean, I think there's a lot that could happen here in the next 365 days. Whether it's they announce that they've bought the property in Arlington and they're going forward, and or that this fell through out here in Arlington Heights. I don't know. I don't know all the logistics of what they're going through as far as trying to secure that. I know that from people I've talked to over there that there has been quite a bit of work done out there on testing of soil and inside the facility itself, a lot of testing and things like that. And it's so much over my head, I have no idea what they're actually doing. But with that being said, they're doing their due diligence there to see if that's what's going to work for them out there. So, the best news that any of the horsemen could have is that either one, the racetrack stays with the Bears and the Bears want it there and we find a way to make it work, or that the Bears stay in the city, which I know that the city of Chicago would desperately want that to happen. So I'm sure they're working hard behind the scenes to try to make that happen. And I think that maybe that casino scenario could tie into it some way, somehow.
Well, I suggest that people go to dailyherald.com and read O'Donnell's piece. I'll send a tweet out to give everybody the exact coordinates. I think they'll find it very interesting. And I want to thank Keith Mallion, who saw it last night when it posted. It does have a yesterday's dateline on it, and Keith sent it to me, so it tied in perfectly with the opportunity to talk to you and congratulate you on She Can't Sing's win. And you're having a terrific meet at Fairgrounds. Before we talk about the horses, Chris, what is the status of the approvals and the situation when it comes to that licensing issue for the OTBs and such
in here in Chicago? Well, what has happened is that those OTBs that were owned by Arlington and operated by Arlington have now been shifted to Hawthorne. And Hawthorne has taken over, I believe, three of them. But there's, in the statute, I believe they're allowed up to 19. And that number, I may not be right about that, but I believe the cap is 19 or 20. And Hawthorne is now seeking in Springfield to the legislature to extend that well past the 19 or 20, whatever the number might be. They're wanting to add more, and the racing board back in January, I believe it was, ruled that those OTBs would not stay with Arlington, and it didn't make a lot of sense why they were, if they were out of Illinois with horse racing, that those would then move over to Hawthorne. Hawthorne has taken them over, and they're all operating as they were before. So I believe right now we're just waiting to try to pass this legislation, which shouldn't get any pushback, I wouldn't think, to extend that number beyond the 20 for Hawthorne to add even more once that takes place.
Well, and in the meantime, it just so happens yesterday, Jimmy DeVito sat with us for a few minutes, and we talked, like you and Brian Williamson and so many, so many Illinois horsemen that have been forced, into a diaspora, as it were, by what's gone on with Arlington. And you've wintered elsewhere, of course, for years, but everybody has made their adjustments, whether it's going to Indiana, which of course this week became Horseshoe, no more Indiana Grand, everybody has done what they have to do, what's good for them and for their outfits and for their owners.
Yeah, this year is going to be a a big challenge for the local horsemen that made Arlington their home during the summer. So I being one of them, Jimmy DeVito being one of them. And I know that as we currently speak, there's a lot of horsemen that don't know where they're going to land yet. I mean, Indiana has an issue with that they have a certain number of stalls. They have to make sure they take care of their people who have been there. Chris Polson, fantastic racing secretary, good friend of mine. I've been communicating with him, and he's under this pressure that he'd like to help us horsemen from Arlington and Chicago, but he's got to take care of the people who are there, which I totally understand. If I were somebody that's been there and been loyal to the Indiana program, that I sure wouldn't want to be pushed out in lieu of some horsemen who have never been there before. So, you know, that's one issue. The other issue is, you know, where can you get into once the Hawthorne meet in the spring is over at the end of June, and find a place to land between there and the start of Hawthorne in around the 20th of September. So these are the challenges that a lot of us are facing. And my concern is that maybe we can make it through 1 year of this. But going forward, I'm not sure how many horsemen will be able to sustain that. In other words, I think they'll move to another spot, and that's where they'll permanently be. They'll never make it back to Illinois. And if you're trying to build a program, once you get a Racino up and running at Hawthorne, and hopefully a second racetrack at some point, which, you know, has its major challenges as well, I think you lose those people. They may end up somewhere else. They may get out of the business altogether. So this year is a challenge, and I've been very vocal on this, not only to the Carey family, but to the industry, that, you know, another year of this in 2023 could be a real problem for us on my horse.
Well, as every conversation on this topic, Chris, whether with you or Mike Campbell, they all end the same way, which is we will wait, watch, and see. It's one of these stories that it's just the twists and the turns and the ongoing. The ongoing angst that's associated with it—it's just been very difficult. And
it has, Stephen, and I'm amazed at the resilience of our horses.
Yep.
I mean, we've got 190 horses on the backstretch thoroughbreds right now at Hawthorne, and those are horsemen who are actually training, jogging in the barns and running at Turfway Park. I mean, that's how tough these guys are.
Wow.
And these men and women, and I wow. feel for them, and I think we'll see that over the summer. I think we'll see, even though the standardbred meet's going on, not many standardbred horsemen come and stable there. They're out at training centers and other locations, and then they come in, ship in the run. So the pack stretch is predominantly, I think there's maybe in the middle of the summer there might be 200 harness horses there, and the rest, you know, is empty, or as this summer comes, I'm sure there'll be some thoroughbred horsemen that'll just hang there and then try to run in different spots, just out of jogging out of the barn. But as we all know, as horsemen, that's not sustainable for in the long run. So there has to be some solution. The problem is these solutions seem to not come very quickly. They're very, very, they're tedious and they drag, and I just don't know how long people can hold on, but. Time will tell, and I hope for the best for everyone.
Chris Block, in his role as the head of the Illinois Horsemen, and the head of the Chris Block Racing Stable, you continue to win stakes at fairgrounds. You know, we talked after in January after another mystery one, and here was She Can't Sing. You talk about Saturday's win in the Big Al.
Well, Steve, that was. It was a little surprising, to be honest with you. I was really back and forth with what to do if She Can't Sing. She seemed to be best on dirt around one turn, especially in between six and seven furlongs. And I tried sprinting her a couple times early on here at the fairgrounds meet, and I run into LZ and change of control, and my filly just didn't look comfortable out there trying to do that. Even I mean that is a difficult far turn to maneuver when you're going two turns in a route race, let alone in a sprint. And she just never seemed to make it through the turn real smoothly, trying to keep that maintain that speed through there and then try to finish down the lane. Now, she did run second in the first one there, but LZ won it pretty comfortably. So I just decided that I was either going to give her some time off and freshen her for the late spring and summer, or I was going to try two turns turf, which I'd had done that before with her as a two-year-old and early three-year-old, and she actually ran pretty well. She was second in the maiden special weight at Arlington, her first start of her life. Then I took her to Keeneland. She was fourth in a maiden there, closing, beaten about five lengths, but against a pretty good group. And then she was third in a route race on the turf at the fairgrounds in a first level condition in, I believe, February of her three-year-old season. So I had some confidence that she was going to possibly handle the two turns. I just didn't know if that was going to be her, you know, if she drove forward a race that would allow her to finish off. And you know, I knew she had to hit a buyer in the mid-80s because I knew the other horses were doing the same thing. So I figured I'd take a shot, and then if it didn't work out, we could always back off and freshen up. So she did really well coming into the race. She's a pretty hardy mare. And I knew as they left the gate, she needed to settle. And I told Jared that. I said, we got to get her turned off, Jared, so she's not pulling on you and using up that energy, so she does have something left for the stretch. And she just fell out of there nicely and came back to him. And to his credit, he gave her this a wonderful trip through there, through the backside and through the car turn. I knew at the 3/8 bull, I could see the way he was sitting on her and the way she was running through the bridle that he was going to have plenty of horse when he turned for home. It's just whether or not she was going to finish off. And then he was able to save some ground through the turn there and actually save ground at the top of the stretch. And then she fought it out from there. And I was real happy with that because I've been trying to get her a stake win, and she's got quite a bit of pedigree. So it was really rewarding to win that. And to do it in a race I didn't think she'd probably be able to do it in made it even more special.
Well, and you absolutely touched on the key element in terms of getting her black type. She is out of a distorted humor mare, distorted music, who was a winner that happened to be a half to Zinze, who was a nice stakes mare. I want to say John Sheriff's, if I'm not mistaken. She's by Bernardini, and, you know, she didn't. It's not as if Loveberry had a big pace to close into, but he had her positioned right. You know, it's funny because when we handicapped the race with Frank McGooey on Friday, Chris, I went reaching for Dawn's Dancer for the same reasons that She Can't Sing ends up, you know, being the right play. Because I thought this was a race where you wanted somebody with tactical speed, you know, going a mile and a 16th, and both She Can't Sing and Dawn's Dancer, you know, have turf sprinted successfully. And, you know, that was the right idea, but it was She Can't Sing's execution here that was really strong. And I mentioned yesterday, you know, kind of touching on the weekend, Jareth Loveberry, I like to think, is opening some eyes. You know, it's a very, very good journeyman that, you know, I think deserves, more attention. You know, right now, I call him kind of a poor man's Brian Hernandez Jr.
Yeah. No, Jareth, I think Jareth is he's actually very heady out there, and I never rode Jareth a lot because in Chicago he rides a lot for Larry Rivelli, and I totally understand that. And so I've ridden him a few times, actually had some success with him. When he told me he was going to the fairgrounds, I said, well, you know, I'll be happy to give you anything and everything I can get you on. And I really I've watched him in Chicago. you know, he kind of got labeled as a speed rider because a lot of Larry's horses have a ton of speed.
Sure.
And he's always up on the front end. But I've seen him ride the turf before, and he rides it very, very sharp out there. He knows how to save ground. He knows how to get a horse in position if he's got the horse underneath him. He usually never gives up ground if he doesn't have to. And the other day, I just felt going up to going into the far turn there, I said, well, he's got her position right where she needs to be to give her the best shot. And she was going to need a trip like that against that group to give her a chance to possibly get there. So, I think you're right, Steve. I think he is opening some eyes, and I think this move down there to the fairgrounds this winter for him has been very fruitful, not only in the fact he's done well, but that he has caught some people's attention.
Well, nice to be at this point on the calendar and the season at fairgrounds with a male and female stake winner. Talk about both going forward. She can't sing, and you got one more round of opportunities. And I saw that another mystery had his first work back, an easy half, since his stake win.
So another mystery, the goal for him would be the Elkhorn on the April 23rd at Keeneland. So I'm trying to decide between whether or not to train him to it or maybe run in the Mervyn Munoz and see what we can get there and at least have that race underneath him going forward to the to the Elkhorn. He likes the fairgrounds. Now, he hasn't run well there when it's been real soft. So I would probably look at possibly not running if it did come up soft. But if it was a firm turf, I think the race would be probably pretty deep. But I think it'd serve a real good purpose going forward. And you never know. He has run some big races there at the fairgrounds. He could jump up and get a piece of it. So we'll just see how that plays out going forward. He's doing real well. He came out of the Conley in real good order. And we're just keeping him happy and healthy, and he'll do the rest from that standpoint. As far as She Can't Sing is concerned, we'll probably come back if she's in her groove where she was going to the last one, the Tom Benson there on the same day as Louisiana Derby and the Munoz. We'll probably run back in there with her.
Very nice. Well, two stake wins at the meet, and a couple of others, maiden claimer the other day as well, I saw. And what do we got left? I mean, once you get past Risen Star and of course, Mardi Gras on Tuesday, the end of that meet really is in sight. What how many more you got between now and breaking camp?
Well, the whole stable there, I've got races picked out for all of them left there. So
nice.
We'll probably make another 10 or 12 starts there before it's all over. All the horses that have run there, we'll cycle through one more time. And Scott, the racing secretary, has got the last book out, and it looks like they line up well for where they ran the last time and where they are right now in their training. So we'll get a few more starts in here and hopefully make some noise there before the end of the meet.
Well, I do have to ask about the one starter that is scheduled. This is coming up on Saturday, and it's a Lothenbach, another Lothenbach homebred. Brother Harold, a Minnesota bred, though, and certainly bred nicely. Tis now out of the Candy Ride mare. Hello, everybody, that Joel Burnt trained. For the Lothenbach.
Brother Harold came into my barn back in November, actually in December. He came 1st of December, and he's progressed along nicely. He has every aspect of being a two-turn horse. He hasn't done anything that has knocked our socks off, but he is he's got a really good attitude toward training. He's got a great attitude toward working in company where he wants to, it looks like he wants to compete. I just feel like that we need to get him two turns and probably not throw him to the wolves against those main special weights. Those races can be pretty deep down there. So I think he's well placed there. And if he handles turf, I think he should run fairly well. He's done everything right and mentally seems to be pretty focused. So, you never know until you run them and see what you got, but I don't think distance is an issue, and I don't think desire is an issue. He seems like he wants to try. It's just whether or not we'll have to see where his abilities take him on Saturday. But it'll be a good start to getting going, and it'll kind of tell us how to go forward.
It is interesting, the program that Mr. Lothenbach has cultivated, and I think about the happy American that Neil Pessin has, that's also a long-winded type.
Yes. Yes, I can't speak for Neil, but I think Neil would tell you that that horse has come a long way from his first start when he ran him at Kentucky Downs on the grass. And I remember the day I wondered if he even left the starting gate. And he was so far back, he never got on track. But that horse has come a long way and actually ran a big race there on Saturday.
Yep.
I think he got a little too far back, but was closing nicely, and looked like to me really the only horse that did close.
Yep.
So I think I told Neil, I said, I think that horse has got a lot going forward with him going forward. So it's one of those that they've got some high aspirations for if things work out for him going forward.
Are you, I imagine being, you know, part of the Team Lothenbach, that you must be on the Neil Pessin lunch tour, no?
Oh, there's no question about it. Yes, lunch and dinner. Neil's a dear friend, Steve. He's been a dear friend of mine for a long time. I have a lot of great memories of eating with Neil, and but yeah, he's a great friend.
Well, who was it? Well, we had dinner last Thursday. The McCoys and company brought me to Mosca's for the first time, Neil, somebody talked about having an answer to his physician when he came back from a winter in New Orleans, and said, "What the hell's going on? You gained 20 pounds." He said, "Well, I got to tell you about this man I was working for. I had to go to lunch and almost every day and."
He makes his rounds. That's
unbelievable.
Mosca's is one of them. I've been there with him a few times, actually, and it's a good spot, really good spot.
Well, he couldn't. I was pestering him to take me to Brightson's for the first time.
Oh,
and
yes.
We couldn't make it happen. But he said, "All right, get back here, and we'll get a trip to Brightson's as well."
Yeah, so. Steve. I'll just add this. Yeah, when you make it back down there, if you can make it to Brightson's, you will not be disappointed there. That is outstanding.
No. Well, outstanding job on Saturday. Jareth Loveberry, who also was emotional about the win and was happy for him and happy for you. Chris, thanks for the thoughts on how the horsemen are monitoring the situation with Arlington, and continued success. Finish strong, and we'll talk soon, obviously. You got yourself a nice stead with the team. Are you going to be here for HBPA next week at Oakland?
No, actually, we're sending someone else in there for that, Steve. Actually, the horsemen, our horsemen here, we belong to the THA.
THA, yeah.
We do tend that at times. So we have Tom Swearingen as our representative there at Oakland, and he's going to be attending for us.
Very good. All right. Well, this was invaluable, Chris Block, everybody, and Chris, thanks so much.
Thank you, Steve. Have a great day.
You too. There you go. And, Chris Block, I don't know how many of those Illinois horsemen, Hammer, over the years you've crossed paths with, probably some steak shippers and things. But between Chris Block and Brian Williamson and Mike Campbell, and, he brought up Ravelli, there's so many others. Obviously, we could discuss, but Jimmy yesterday.
It's very strange. Good morning, as close as the horse racing community is, it's still regional in some factions. And I've been, just about every region, and I made my way finally to the Midwest. But I just spent hardly any time up in Chicago. I knew Jimmy, of course, from when he used to go down to Gulfstream in the wintertime and met him. But, you know, those names you've met, maybe shook hands. Chris, don't know at all, followed him. Followed him more, to tell you the truth, on the horseman leadership side, with all the stories going on there and how he's, you know, kind of kept the horsemen together and had a little bit of a plan there. And as you can tell, he's very well spoken and really is a caring sort. And so in my positions that I've been in, I, you know, do a lot of dealings with the horsemen and their group. So respected him on that matter, and of course on the track too as well. But never met Chris. It's pretty crazy. Some guys you happen to run into wherever you get to, and some guys you never see. So that region is as new as this region where I'm here. Third year here, and I still haven't met everybody here. It's pretty crazy. So anyway, sounds like I said, every time you've had him on, sounds like a good guy, and I was hoping that's why I asked. If he was going to be here, I would have liked to have met him.
Tom Swearingen, though.
Tom's here.
Yeah.
We know Tom.
Tom will represent the Illinois Horsemen. Well, as volatile as things have been in Illinois, there's been steady and you know, relative calm, and not just calm, but, you know, real success in Pennsylvania. Brian Sanfratello joins us for the Pennsylvania Horsemen and Breeders, and they've got exciting news. They've also got the awards festivity, and Brian, haven't talked in too long. Good morning.
How you doing, Steve?
We're good, and I saw the news that you've got, you know, yet another element to add to the Pennsylvania program, and it, you know, this is when it comes to stallion series and stallion offerings. You know, everybody I think is very familiar with, you know, we talk about the New York Stallion program and Maryland Million, of course, in that same vein. Florida has got their sire stakes. Pennsylvania is going to offer something new, and tell us about it.
Well, as you know, Steve, our program is probably one of the best programs in the country. We have 50% breeder awards for maiden races, 25, and that's for PA sired, 25% for non-PA sired. We have PA bred stakes, restricted races, waiver of maiden claiming, up to 40% owner bonus. Sounds great, but we wanted to continue to grow. So we wanted to do something special for PA stallions and also our PA sired horses. So we got the stallion principals together and asked them what they thought would give a spark to our program. They came up with some good ideas, but they agreed that the two-year-old sired series seemed to be the best option at this time. So what we did was we went back to our racing committee and they laid out the series. So basically for 2022, this year, when we kick it off, the series will consist of two stakes races on each of two race days. The first one, and again, these are open to 2-year-olds, and 2-year-old colts and 2-year-old fillies, PA sired, PA bred horses. The first race will be August 22nd on PA Day at the Races. That'll be 5.5 furlongs. And those two races, colts and fillies, will have a purse of $100,000. And the second will be about a little over 30 days later on September 24th on PA Derby Day. That'll be 6.5 furlongs. So we wanted to get as much exposure as we could the first year that we kicked this off. So who's eligible? Well, all registered PA sired, PA bred 2-year-olds are automatically eligible. There's, for the first year, there's no nomination, entrance, or starter fees. We will have nominations, but they will be at no charge the first year. In 2023, we're going to move to three races in the series for 2-year-olds. I mean, if you want to get off to a great start as a two-year-old, you know, that brings our stakes races to 8 for 2022, 4 for any PA bred, including PA sires, for $750,000 total, and 4 races just for PA sires, totaling $600,000. So we thought that we wanted to do something and to continue to grow, and this is what our stand people told us they wanted.
Well, it's a natural, obviously, and you know, with the kind of stallions that have been Pennsylvania's managed to attract, you know, this is one of those things we talk about it often. It's an absolute bonus and benefit for those that, you know, on a regular basis have to compete against Kentucky type, you know, stallions, and it supports the, you know, it supports the local portion of this. And, you know, I suppose as part of this conversation, Brian, we can also, you know, touch on the constant pressure that you get from Harrisburg, and this is the kind of thing that you can show legislators how you're, you know, supporting the farms, how you're helping, you know, the basically domiciled horses, keeping them, you know, local, keeping them Pennsylvania bred and Pennsylvania sired. There's financial, you know, numbers that can be associated per horse, essentially, that stays in the state, and that's created in the state. So there's benefits to everybody, to, you know, to the farms that are standing the stallions, to the breeders, to the consigners when they're selling them, you know, at Timonium and such, and then for those that buy and campaign them, they're everybody basically benefits.
Yep, and you know, Pennsylvania is not the only state that's, you know, gets pressure from legislature. You know, it just so happens the past 3 years that the governor wanted to transfer money from the Racehorse Development Trust Fund. That didn't happen. He wasn't even close the past 2 years in getting the votes to do it, and it won't happen this year. You know, basically, all the legislators, not all the legislators, but just about every legislator we talk to, you know, says basically this is, it's not going to happen.
In terms of the, you know, one thing that we hadn't talked about, usually we visit after the Mayor's Bread Report comes out, the Jockey Club fact book, you know, talk about the numbers that are anticipated, and now we're you know, 6 weeks plus into the breeding, you know, basically the foaling season. The breeding season started in the last 2 weeks, but talk about the health and the stability of you know, the foal count and the mares that are domiciled.
Well, we wanted to make sure that, which is one of the other reasons we came out with this program, to keep you know, the mares here in Pennsylvania, and hopefully draw some stallions. Of course, not this year, but hopefully next year. I mean, we did get hurt when Northview left because they had Opportunity and Uncle Lino. We had so they moved back to Maryland. We did have mares go to Maryland to breed to them, but we expect most of those mares to come back and fall in Pennsylvania. So other than that, we stayed pretty stable over the past year, and we're hoping that this year that's going to be the same.
Well, this program obviously Eastern Pennsylvania. How about the rest of the state? How do these programs? What's the expansion potential for, you know, for heading out to Presque and you know, talk about that, you know, that portion and that integration and how they can benefit.
Yeah, I think that this year Presque Isle is thinking about racing 100 days. Last year, I think it was only 60, and the year before that was 50 because of COVID. So that looks like they're going to have a strong program there this year. And Penn National also is doing well. So. And we have a lot of PA sired horses at Penn National. So I think they're going to be able to take advantage of this program, too. And then next year when we go to three races, you know, we will talk about, you know, what tracks we'll be running them at. So I think, you know, we're in for a pleasant surprise for 2022.
Now, Brian, always nice to catch up and see what you know what you're doing, and it's you know it's obvious you know the commitment you've had to essentially on a regular basis kind of reassure people. We've had those conversations. We've had conversations with legislators from Pennsylvania and. You know, making sure that breeders understand the monies are there. They're not going anywhere. And when it comes to to the program, obviously the commitment doing something like this continues. So well done, and all the details, PABred.com, everything you could possibly want to know. You got the stallion and farm directory and. People still making decisions about where to technically even where to fall potentially between now and the end of the season. Pennsylvania just continues to excel on this front. Brian Sanfratello, I always appreciate the visit.
Thanks, Steve. It's good to be on. And if you need a PA sired, PA bred, look to the 2-year-old sales this year.
I just picked up yesterday the catalog for I'll be at OBS March, and it's funny you say that. I absolutely was Maryland, Pennsylvania, New York, well represented, but the opportunity, we ran more at parks this year than with our some of our own horses, I absolutely have been thinking along those lines too. So I appreciate the boost.
Thanks, Steve.
Brian Sanfratello, everybody. Brighter Farm, B-R-I-T-E-R Farm on Twitter. And PABred.com, Hammer, you can certainly talk to these kinds of programs, and in fact, under the circumstance in California, what is in recent years? I mean, the CalBred program needed to be counted on. In fact, to fill out cards, and they've attracted some new stallions out there as well.
Well, more and more states are dependent on this on their locally bred program, and it's funny you mentioned parks that still hasn't. It's still not parks to me.
You're a Philly. You're Philly
fan, Philly and even before that,
PHA.
PHA. It'll always be PHA. But back when in the '90s, working at Monmouth, when I first got back there, new to the region, when we were off on Tuesdays or Thursdays, whatever day we were off, I would sneak over to Philly Park and check it out, and with the nose and glasses on, play a few races and enjoy it. And it was just. It was okay. It was Philadelphia Park. It was. And then we're getting the slots. Hal Handel worked there. Jimmy Gagliano even had a stint there. And little be known that I actually flew out there and did a little job interview myself. And when I was looking to get out of Santa Anita at an early period in 2005, 6, 4, 5, 6, somewhere in there, I was flying around the country, even with the Finger Lakes, believe it or not. I was looking to get out. It wasn't a year-round situation, and now to hear, Pennsylvania as one of the states, New York, of course, included, that have really expanded their breeding program and advertised and done it. And, you know, it's great for the local horsemen, and it gives them a chance to stay in state and to hear, you know, we hear Brian's, I know his voice. We met a couple years ago at the university in Arizona, but to hear him, you know, weekly and monthly come on and talk about it, but to see the success of it, of the programs, especially the local ones, it gives them hope. Like that, what worries me a lot about the situation in Illinois is the local breeding program. What happens then?
Oh, they've dwindled. We've discussed that with Chris and Team Block, and they've dwindled down to, you know, Mrs. Vanier. It's tragic. At the same time, there's this ebb and flow, and I'm sure when we get a chance to visit, I mentioned earlier in passing with Chris, the rechristening this week of Indiana Grand to Horseshoe. And I'm sure when we talk to Eric Hallstrom, we'll discuss this. And they're essentially, this is not a new phenomenon. The ebb and flow of the horse flesh, as John and JJ used to say, horses follow money, and you're going to gravitate to where there's a healthy, vital program. That's that's one of the reasons Brian and I reach out to have Brian basically advertise these kinds of initiatives, the program like that.
We talked to Ron a little bit yesterday about what's going on in Arkansas. I mean, you wouldn't, when you think of a breeding program, you would never think of Arkansas.
That's true.
I mean, so there's actually been some talk I've heard some bigger names thinking about, coming out here and starting a little program here with the extended meet and the money that's given away here. If the money's not there, of course it doesn't pay. So the Arkansas bred program is growing, to Pennsylvania, and it's just, like you said, more and more depend on those horses to fill races. And I'll tell you what, when there's an Arkansas bred race here, there's 12 in every one of them. It's because they'd have some time off. Some of them go to the nearing neighboring states to run during the off season, but a lot of them just kick them out and come back and just run for the, now 5 months here at Oaklawn, and they can make money doing it. So it's pretty wild. While you were talking to Brian, just got a note that Keith Chamblee called and said, which I knew about, but I wasn't sure when, he's coming to town tomorrow. Unfortunately, it'll be after the show, but he's coming with the new NTRA president, Tom Rooney. They're coming to visit Oaklawn for the Rebel weekend.
Oh, nice.
And so they'll be here just kind of check it out, meet with Mr. Sella, and see the new hotel and the arena, maybe for some future events.
Well, let's get to the real heart of you having another opportunity to sit with Tom Rooney, because you're obviously being groomed as a potential front office candidate for the Steelers. It's obvious.
I'm looking for an assistant coaching position myself. No. That's great. I'm hearing that there's some maybe some quarterback potentials here at some of the high schools will be looking at the draft. But it's great, because as we met Tom for the first time in Tucson during the symposium, and I got a little nervous talking to him, but he's such a good guy that as a longtime Steeler fan, of course, the Rooney name just, gives you shivers. And just about, but a good guy, hitting the ground running, I think. And just the fact that, they're going to tour around and visit a few places and, kind of meet some people and not just sit in an office and then push some buttons. But he's going to be real active, and, he's a go-getter. So it'll be good to see him here. I guess I was hoping to be here a little early. We could get him on the show, and I don't know if he's here. I don't think they're here for any other reason than to tour Oaklawn and see the facilities with the new stuffs here. So and meet Mr. Sella and discuss whatever they do on that level.
Well, we're gonna take our only break. Actually, let's take our only break of the morning, Tony Black is going to join us when we come back. And I thought earlier this morning that maybe there's a chance we could get one of those powwows between Tony and Rich Migliore to discuss the situation again with Irad Ortiz, who is just on now on a regular basis. I mean, he already had drawn attention and criticism. Then an incident that was so glaring and egregious that it got him a 30-day suspension. And then over the last, 5-6 days, going back to Friday, he was DQ'd. Yesterday, again, another, seeming guided missile, I don't want to call it an attack, certainly not in light of what has gone on overnight in Eastern Europe, but at the very least, an aggressive posturing on more or less just Moquette wants to know if you liked your chai. So we'll let Tony address it. And Tony, watch the two replays, the sixth from yesterday, if you haven't seen it. And it was the seventh on Friday when he was DQ'd. So we'll take a break here. Our only one of the morning. We're live at Oaklawn. And
The
door is open again. Yes. If you hear any shivering in my voice, that's what it is. We'll be back after this at the races, coming to you here at SiriusXM live at Oaklawn Park.
Cup champions. In no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of Mayor's Bread has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's Live Full report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at pabread.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry?